Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Bez Hashem, Shalom Bayis, Shir number 523, where Tversky has a beautiful chapter on communication. There used to be something called a two-way radio, and that's the way to go. That type of way of communicating will work tremendously in a marriage and in life between Bein Adam L'Chaveri, any interpersonal relationship as well. We mentioned a couple of shiurim ago that couples may have beautiful communication skills, but if they're going in opposite direction in moving sidewalks, they won't be able to communicate because they're not headed in the same direction. So they have to work on being in the same direction as they communicate. So a two-way radio is like this. They receive a signal. Now, after finishing the conversation, basically, of how two-way radios worked, this person said that all family members should have a two-way radio and talk to each other only that way. Basically, talking on a two-way radio is not like talking on a phone. Why? The way it works is you cannot interrupt me. He must wait until I finish speaking, then he can talk and I can't interrupt him. That's how it works. They both can't communicate the same time. So therefore, one says what they have to say, ends it, and then the other one responds back. Now, of course, don't use WhatsApp voice notes to each other as a couple to do this. If I'm talking face-to-face, eye-to-eye communication, you behave like it's a two-way radio in that sense. Because what happens is if you interrupt, and there's proneness to interrupt, because what happens is when you're saying something to a person, instead of being hearing you out, he or she is thinking of what to say in response, and usually it's going to be a defensive response. Now, how can people really understand each other if they don't give each other the chance to finish what they are saying? And if they are preparing a reply in their brain instead of listening to what they're saying, that's not a connection. Now, although it's unrealistic to communicate via radio, these two-way radios are probably obsolete by now, but we need to behave as if that exists. One of the greatest problems of communication is not hearing what the other person is saying and not having enough time to consider the merits of that other person's point of view and think through the proper response. So you should not interrupt when another person, your wife or husband, is talking. It's one of the midos of a chacham brought down in Perkei Avos, Perek Hey Mishnah Tes, not to interrupt another person's speech. If you interrupt while your husband or wife is speaking, you're indicating that you lack wisdom. You're missing that criteria. How can your spouse respect you if you yourself are acknowledging you're not a chacham? You are not a chacham because you're violating what the Perkei Avos says a chacham is, which is not to interrupt and listen fully, and then respond. Rabbi Zeira in the Gemara, Gemil Gila, Daf Chav Chesam Abayis, says that the reason he was Zeicha Tarichas Yom HaVashonim is because he never raised his voice at home. Not only a school of Arichas Yom HaVashonim, that it's a school of a good long life, it's a school of a long and happy marriage. Divrei Chachamim Benachas Nishmoim. That's in Koheles, Paraktes, Pasuk Yud Zayin. The words of the wise are listened because they are spoken to softly. As long as you speak that way, the other person will be makabel. As soon as you raise your voice, the other person will tune out. So if you wish to be heard, you speak softly. There's a book called 10 Minutes a Day to a Better Marriage by Dr. Meir Wickler. We didn't yet review that book, but Be'ez Hashem, with Hashem's help, we will do that. Rav Tversky himself says here that that book, 10 Minutes a Day to a Better Marriage by Dr. Meir Wickler, has excellent instruction for effective communication. He's not going to duplicate it in this book. Go to the source, which Billy Neder will try to do shiurim on that book. But here's one aspect that one needs to know. There's something called nonverbal communication. I brought this up once in Rav Tversky's other book that we explored, or we're going to explore. Well, it depends where the shiurim come up, as a feedback on Rav Tversky's book, I've Got to Get Out of My Own Way. We discussed this, the nonverbal honest communication. So I'm going to repeat here an experience Dr. Tversky had about emes, about being truthful with a husband and wife. He says as follows. In my first year of psychiatric training, I had a patient who was a hypochondriac and whose various complaints were clearly drug-seeking behaviors. I mean, they were kvetching in order to get more drugs. I told the nurse to give a placebo injection of saline, and she told me that the hospital regulations prohibit the use of placebos. This was very strange because as an intern in medicine, I did use placebos when I felt them to be warranted. Curious, I asked the clinical director for explanation of this restriction. And the clinical doctor said as follows, Dr. Tversky, the human method of communication by speech is superimposed on a more primitive method, which is found in lower forms of life that do not have speech. Animals communicate a number of ways, even by emitting a body odor. People may communicate by body language, which may often be even more effective than speech. Not only are tone and inflection as significant as words, but even one's facial expressions and one's posture may be more powerful than the communication done by many words. So it is important to realize, he told Rabbi Tversky, that we may have control over our verbal communication, but if you give this patient an injection and you're saying, I'm giving you something for your pain, and really you're not because it's just a placebo, your nonverbal communication over which you have little control will say, I'm giving you nothing for your pain. And this mixed message of your word saying, I'm giving you something to relieve your pain, and what's in your heart that you're giving nothing for your pain, will be conveyed to the patient, and that patient will lose their trust in you. So in contrast to some other medical specialties, the most important therapeutic tool is the patient's trust. You cannot endanger the patient's trust. Now, prior to learning this, Rabbi Tversky said, although he abided by the Torah, midvar sheker terchak, he didn't lie, but still he stretched the truth on occasion, rationalizing why it's permitted to do so. And he said that there are few things that are abused as much as the heter of Laman HaShalim, for the sake of peace. And I'm telling you, we gave shiurim on this. A husband and wife, yes, you're allowed to change things because of shalom, like Hashem changed Sarah's words to say, I am old versus my husband is old. You have that. But it is an exception to the rule. One needs to learn how to say the truth to one's husband or wife with sensitivity, not say a truth. And plus, people aren't good liars. So a roll of eyes, you'll see a frown, looking at a watch, all this conveys more than words. So you need to be honest with each other, and we had other shiurim on that. But basically, the mutual trust, which is based on truth, is the basic cement of a successful marriage. Now, in very, very rare exceptions, you want to protect your spouse from shocking news. You ask a shaila how to go about that temporarily or whatever to hide that. That's a separate issue. But like exception, there are exceptional cases. But generally speaking, a husband and wife should not lie to each other, even when they could justify stretching the truth, even if they could justify being mishana, because your body language and your verbal communication will give you away. You should really work with each other that I will not lie to you. And if there's something I cannot tell you, I'll say I cannot tell you, and we'll respect each other's confidentiality. But these white lies, because of shaking the peace, is not healthy. If the meatloaf of a wife tastes like burnt rubber, so on one hand, you don't want to hurt your wife's feelings, and you want to tell her it's delicious, but then you'll be eating burnt rubber leaf meatloaf for the rest of your life. And why shouldn't she? Didn't you tell her it was great? But what if she makes it for guests? It's not for the guests, right? So instead, it's better to say, I love you for trying to cook and I love you for it, but there's something not right with this meatloaf. If we serve it to company, it won't be well received and you'll be hurt by that. And let's work together to get the recipe. It's normal, you know, things don't come out right and you'll learn. And if you say it the right way, your wife will not take it as an insult and will even appreciate it. Again, criticism, when delivered lovingly, is not only accepted, it'll be appreciated. So Rav Tversky himself once invited a young couple, he was invited to a young couple's home for dinner. And everything that the young woman tasted terrible. And he became nauseous. He wanted to go home and just throw up there. But to be polite, he told her everything was delicious. But he never showed up to that house again. But she said, inasmuch as I told her how delicious the food was, she must have served it to other friends. And for all he knows, the woman may never have a dinner guest again. And he thinks back, it would have been kinder in the long run if he would have told her, we enjoyed your company. Don't take offense at this. But I know you try to serve gourmet dishes, but leave that for the chefs. Stick to simple foods. I hope you invite us again, but instead of exotic dishes that you try that may not be good, either test it out and work through it, or serve simple roast chicken, potatoes, things that are not fancy, that will taste good, that doesn't need special things, and we'll all have a great time that way. It's painful for the moment, but long-term chesed. So that is the idea. Some people are quiet, not because they don't want to rock the boat, shalom, but it's really a fear of pain. If I told you my real feelings, you may hurt me. Or if I expressed my upsetness, it may destroy you. You know, but the idea is this type of silence is not healthy. And sometimes a silence may be a willful ignoring of another person's words or actions, like you don't deserve a response. So warm, caring, and loving statements are important. They facilitate communication. When you have to say something that is constructive criticism of anything, you sandwich it between things. If, like, I know I love you very much and I appreciate you do everything for me, you cook certain things very, very well, and Mr. Shem, you'll even become greater at it, but this particular thing is something's off with it, or I don't like it, or it's missing the salt, or whatever the case may be. But then you reiterate, I love you very much and I cherish our relationship, and so on and so forth. You do that. Don't just say, if you basically want to give a compliment, thank you for bringing in the groceries from the car. You say, I'm thrilled that I went out to the car and I found that you already brought in the groceries. Even though you were tired and you came home from learning late last night or after a full day, I appreciate it, how considerate you were taking the time to do this and help me out in this way. It spells out that chorus, I tell you in detail. And we assure them the truth of our feeling of caring and love. So communication is important to be done in a healthy way, a truthful way. At the same time, it needs to be done in a loving way and to allow the person to fully express themselves before you respond back. Listen carefully and deeply, and then you respond back in a deep way. Bracha v'atzlacha to all.